Monika Wiehaiber, I want to welcome you warmly as an expert and guest to the Conscious Evolution Summit today.
Thank you, Pooja. Thanks for the invitation. It's a real honor for me to be here.
You're very welcome. And so today we have a conversation from Germany to Greece.
Exactly.
And I also want to welcome you listening to the audio or watching the video wherever you might be on this planet. So a very warm welcome to you also. And today I want to dive deeper together with Gabi into the topic of feminine leadership or feminine qualities. Because both of us, Gabi and I, we really are, I guess, since some years on this path where we kind of really are, let's say, digging deeper and discovering and engaging and researching and trying to find out what does it mean to be more in our feminine qualities. Because many of us, I mean, we grew up and still live in a world which is still mainly ruled by male qualities, especially in business or in leadership. And I guess what we have in common, that we sense and that we have a longing in our heart to live from a different foundation and to really embody those feminine qualities. And so this conversation will be about sharing about it, finding out about it, and kind of discovering this topic. And Gabi, maybe you can share a bit in the beginning, because mainly I invited you because I came across also this organization of FAMKU, which is quite new, and where I know that this organization is really about bringing more awareness and consciousness into feminine qualities. And I just want to clarify, it's in men and women.
So, thank you. Thank you.
Maybe you can share a bit about the vision or the mission from this organization to start with.
Yeah, thanks for inviting that into the conversation. So FAMKU is an organization that's meant to, or what we try is to find, to create places and spaces where we can have those dialogues around the feminine qualities, what we think, and a lot of people, like you, Pooja, just said at the beginning, I have a feeling that this is needed in the time right now to make any change for this planet. And so we create summits or online webinars. We have interviews also with people from all areas in society, like politics, science, the corporate world, of course, which is a big part of the focus, but arts, media, everything, because we think it shows in every area of in our society right now, in our lives, that those qualities of, I think for me, one is very important, like the deep listening and being instead of doing. The inclusivity, compassion, loving kindness, all really big words, I know, but they're all in us. They're innate in every human being. So it's really not a discussion or a dialogue about what you also said, the female and the male, man and woman. It's about qualities, what we traditionally more connect with the feminine qualities, feminine side. But it doesn't mean that's just about us women here who are sitting and talking. So And we create summits all over the world where we gather people who are interested in that topic and already on that path of bringing it to the society in their fields of expertism, of knowledge, what they have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very inspiring. And I think those events, those summits are really carried by a deep love for this planet, for the human beings. And that's just what I think most people sense when they are there. So they get inspired on a deeper level of the beauty in the world, the beauty of life, the beauty of human beings, of interactions, of, and that also brings them more into the being instead of the doing, or like feeling that connection and coming from that connection in their doing. Mm-hmm. So this is basically what we try to do. We're trying to find ways how we can integrate those qualities in all those areas that I mentioned already, mm-hmm. and how we can basically step on new territory, mm-hmm. because we don't know. Mm-hmm. So it's really, we're exploring together with others on those, on this journey, because we haven't been there.
Mm-hmm. So it's really a learning on the path. Mm, it's learning by walking the path.
You know? Absolutely. Yeah. And in creating spaces for that, spaces who are open, who nourish the senses, who bring us into the being, into the connection of what the longing is about, and see how we can find ways and then go out and do it from that state of being nourished and connected and in collaboration, cooperation, instead of competing. And
what made me curious is when you said we are creating spaces, because I know it on a personal level. I, for example, created this space for that. I live in a round space in a yurt, because mm-hmm. a few years ago, it was 2012, I really felt that when I would live in a round room, not in a square room, that this would make a difference. This would impact me when I am in it, when I meditate in it, when I work in it, when I sleep in it. And it's hard to put in words, but this space really makes a difference and supported me a lot in kind of, as you said, those qualities are inherent in each one of us, but this space supported that they come more to the surface. And I remember the first months when I was in the yurt, I was just so many times crying. Crying was happening. It was a deep process of really feeling sadness about what I see in myself, how I'm reacting, and it feels sad because I know deeply I could do different. Or what I saw around me, or what I saw when I looked in the world. And a long process was, yes, a lot of crying and cleansing. And it's funny, but this space made this more possible. And I'm curious what you found out, what really practical ingredients support in creating a space, a room where we can connect more to those qualities.
Well, what we do at the summit, for example, that we really choose a beautiful place, mm-hmm. like something that really pleases our eyes, our senses, and that we pay attention to little details, mm-hmm. to being. This is not just, yeah, we need a room and we have to fit like 200 people in there, and is the technology, you know, up front there, whatever. Yes, that's important, of course. But it's like, how can we make it a place where people enter and feel nourished, so that they go like, ah, yeah. And that their attention is captured by a beautiful flower or like a nice little name tag, you know, handwritten beautifully, like all those little details. And that's not hard to integrate in our daily life, actually. But it's a focus. It's paying attention to the details. And in doing so, we create for us like a whole space that that emanates a certain energy. So if you enter it, it's like, you know, you feel it. It was made with love. It was really thought through, but also felt through what is needed. And I think this is what people are touched by it. So, and yes, the technology has to be there and it has all to be organized. And that's like the masculine side, if you want to call it that way. So beauty, surround yourself with something beautiful, whatever that is for you, you know, but just take the time to do that. And that's gonna change a lot already. Taking time to focus on beautiful things, because this is something that takes our attention. I think beauty is that's very individual, but there's also something that's that applies to everyone. I don't know if I'm finding the right English words right now, but it's universal. So there are things in life we are all touched by, different or certain pieces of art, even if we don't like usually that kind of paintings or sculptures. But they are man-made, but they are not man-made. There was something else coming through. And this is also what those people say later. It came to me. I was just a vessel. I was being an instrument for something bigger. It wasn't me. Of course, they had like their skills, right? A painter had like 10,000 millions of strokes. He tried and practiced and practiced. But then when they're ready and they enter that space of being, there's something coming through, and from that space, they create something that touches, that's transmitted later on. When people watch that painting, they feel that what came through those people. And that's a certain beauty. And beauty has, I think the beauty who touches all of us has something to do with the deeper being, with like the essence of something. And then the way of expression, you know, it's a book, it's a painting, it's music, it's a sculpture, it's a speech, it doesn't matter. So we all find our own ways where you know your medium is working with people, and I think there's a transmission there. You know, if you work with them like on a body level, but also on like a speaking to them, counseling, whatever it is, it can be in all sorts of things. But it's this connection to something that's beyond our very personal humanness. It's more like the human being, the being part of the human. That's in the beauty, I think. And so if a space is created in that, coming from the being, coming from that essence, it's gonna have an effect on you. And if your space, you're around, and I think the circle is also symbolic for the feminine qualities, one of the feminine qualities, whereas the masculine is more the linear, going forward, being, you know, like straight, result oriented. But this, like this round space, what you created, it's also like a space of being held, and everything can happen there. So I think there was a lot of completion for you when you entered that
room. And what I found also important was what I connect also this to the quality of a sphere is really this mobility, this freedom to go in each direction. There is no preference in a way. It's very flexible. It's this mobility. And also another aspect, what was especially important for me and still is, and not just as a living space, is being close to nature. So because I sense in nature, it's vibrating in its being. It's not
absolutely
vibrating in structures and complexity in difficult mind things. It's so much vibrating just in a simplicity like we see in babies. And so that supports me a lot, and I'm curious how you see that.
Yeah, I'm so with you on that. And I think when we go out in nature, and I think trees are phenomenal for getting in touch with our own being, because they're so rooted in their being. There's no wanting, there's no goals, there's no nothing. And if you really contemplate on a tree or trying to sense them, and if you get in touch with their being, with the essence, that they're just there, that means if you can sense that, if you get an experience of that, then it's also in you. So this is actually your being connecting with the beingness of the tree. Otherwise it wouldn't be possible. But since they don't have any, the trees there, they don't live in concepts, like in a conceptual mind, what we do, most of us, most of the time, because this is how we are conditioned nowadays, that we are really strongly just in our brains. And that's what we also link to the masculine in our conversations. And there's nothing wrong about it. It's great to have this brilliant brain who can think, but if we choose to think, and rather than if we are thought all the time, you know, being thought by something, so it's not our choice anymore nowadays, most of the time. So the nature is fantastic. It's just, for me, that's also the, you know, the way or the place I always felt very secure, very fine with who I am, with my own beingness. It was always the place where I went to, even as a child, and still nowadays. Yeah, and I think this is missing in those huge cities, that people are so disconnected from that, and also get disconnected from their own being. And the bigger principles in life, the life principles, because it's also superficial and artificial, but we sense something is wrong, but we can't really get a grip around it, because we're so disconnected. So nature, yeah, big time. So I would, you know, it should be mandatory that everybody has to go out, like by law, and spend time in nature, like as often as possible, or at least once a week, and like really in a conscious way, connect.
Yeah, that is what I like to add in a way, but because we can be in nature and party and drink and chat all the time. I mean, that's better than always being in a building. But for me, honestly, I prefer it the most when I'm totally alone in nature, where there is no conversation. Or my partner and myself, when we go for a long walk, hardly talk. We talk in the beginning and we talk when we arrived, but hours in between, we are mostly not talking at all. There is no wish to talk. It would be as if we would interrupt the magicalness and the sacredness, what we witness when we listen and when we feel and when we sense and when we are in nature. So I really, what comes up also in our conversation is this slowing down and listening and being in if it's in nature or with people or in communal spaces. And
I think if we don't slow down, you know, it's very, very difficult for us to become aware and to become conscious. Mm. Because if I'm like in this stressed mood and just rushing from one thing to the other, which is very, you know, the daily thing for most people in our society, in the Western world at least, we don't feel that moment, right? We are already always ahead of our time, which is in a way not possible because it's always just that moment, but we are not there. We don't experience that moment because we're already in our thought, what do I have to do, and my, you know, my bucket list and my plans and my task to fulfill and to pick up the kids and go to that meeting and, you know, yada yada yada. We all know that. And in those times, we don't feel, we don't realize what's going on inside, and we can't make really conscious decisions about how we interact with someone. Mm-hmm. So, and we are already somewhere else in our head. Even when I, you know, I would ask you a question and I don't even hear the answer because I'm already somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And most of us, all the listeners, I'm sure know, you know, about the quality of deep listening. And it's not just that we sit down and take time to listen. It's also to listen from a being state instead of the mind space where we listen and then think what we can answer. So it's like connecting, the deep listening is connecting from my essence to your essence. Mm. And then everybody feels more seen and heard and recognized and acknowledged and who they are. Mm-hmm. And that, I don't know, that's magic. It's just changing a lot in people, because then they feel like the person in front of me is not there in that moment, if I get really, really present, I really pull the presence out of the other person. It's easier for the other person to get there too. And if more people do this, the more present we all get, I think we arrive at a state where a lot of things will not be able for us, or a lot of things can't happen anymore, because we're so conscious about it. And we would make different choices if we would feel. If I'm with you and if I connect to your essence, I love, you know, I feel love. And that even touches me just talking about it, because I just feel love towards you. And how could I, you know, even think of harming you in any way, mm-hmm. be it verbally or with an action or lying to you or something? Mm-hmm. So I think that would change a lot. So mm-hmm. we have like a conscious evolution, since we are, it is a process. We are evolving, all of us, and as a collective. It's so important to go inside, to connect to our essence. And the more we are in that space of being, the more we can support and help others to get there more easily. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things will just not happen anymore.
Mm-hmm. I totally resonate with that, because so first of all, when you get slower, maybe you can't do hundreds of things because you are too slow to do hundreds of things. So the unimportant drop away. So this basically became my strategy. The longer my to-do list is, the more I slow down. So then things drop away. And as you also mentioned, my experience when what you talked about, this really being connected from a deep level, from essence to essence, so many things are just not relevant anymore. So also with my partner, we experience often when we really consciously shift awareness into our being, we spend a lot of time without talking. There's no need to talk. It would be an effort to bring something up. It would feel artificial. It would feel kind of, there is no necessity. So what always comes to me is when I sense, as you shared, when we really as many people would kind of really shift into that way of being, I get our world would be not that noisy anymore.
I'm so with you, Puya. But I think that's, for a lot of people, it would require a step in between. I mean, you've done so many work and been on that path for decades, right? So you are in inner state of the being, and you connect to that way easily than others maybe. And I'm sure a lot of other people on that call are, listening are there as well. But for the majority, it would require first to be able to feel what they actually feel inside, to not be scared away from it, because we're so not used to being with our feelings, and the being requires to be, and that's also in our body, and it's not in our head, because there is not the being. So, but if we go in our body and if we slow down, that's scary for a lot of people, because then they feel all those things try hard not to feel all the time, and suppressing them and distracting themselves and being busy, so they don't have to feel. You don't know what came first, the egg or the hen. It's like, was the busyness first, or was the not wanting to feel something, and then they distracted themselves with becoming busy. But it doesn't matter. It's learning to be again with whatever you feel in a whatever moment. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel fear. And what we usually do is like we draw back from it, we pull back from it, we go away from it. So we go in our head, we try to interpret the situation and think about it and try to find solutions, or we eat something, or we take drugs, or we sit in front of the TV, we call a friend, just not feeling.
Yeah.
And if we start to, once in a while, when we, at first we have to recognize that we are scared, maybe, or that we are angry. And that comes with being just more aware of, and on those moments when we become, when something disrupts our daily going, that's helpful. So if you surround yourself with something beautiful, or if you go out in nature and you, I heard that word, that was beautiful, that brings you in the moment. And if you realize that, recognize that moment, just stay with it a little longer. And just go inside and ask, how am I feeling right now? And sometimes an emotion is really strong and we feel it anyway. We get like all angry, right? I know that one personally very well. So, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm angry right now. And what I do now is I take a moment, and that's not a long time. It's not like I have to sit down for half an hour or an hour. It's a moment of, oh, I'm angry. And then I go into my body. I don't go into the story of why I'm angry and why it's appropriate that I'm angry or what I'm going to do with my anger. That's all story. That's also mind again. It's like going inside and feeling like, oh yeah, it's like this, that I don't know, that the contraction in my solar plexus and like the heat shooting up, and I feel it in my throat, and I feel almost blank in my, you know, my brain. And I'm just witnessing those body sensations I'm experiencing in that moment. And I'm allowing it. I allow those sensations to be there, and that they actually get even more space, and allowing them to spread out through my whole body, so that every cell is allowed to experience the anger right now. Until, and that's maybe not even a minute, literally 60, maybe 90 seconds the most, the energy moves through me. And after that, if the anger was the emotion, what I really felt, not something laying on top of another emotion, if the emotion anger was the emotion that was really relevant in that situation, if I let it go through with like just watching the body sensation, witnessing it and allowing it, after that there's a calmness and a spaciousness where I'm alive. And it's good. I don't have to act out on that emotion, but I can let the energy move through me. And then I learned, oh wow, the anger didn't kill me. I didn't kill anyone in allowing the anger, because a lot of people are afraid. I experienced it in my practices when I work with people. But, you know, if I allow the anger, I'm going to be like a monster. I'm going to, you know, I don't know what. But it's accumulated anger. And they feel like if they open the door to anger, it's going to be like, you know, like a huge mass of energy, and they won't be able to hold it. Mm-hmm. So this is why they scare away from it even more and more, and distract themselves. But the energy is still running in us. Mm-hmm. So if we learn to, in small emotions, we're not just, you know, like the biggest emotions and traumas and just small emotions. If we go there and allow them, that we feel them on the body level, and realize how they go through and change, and we change in that, and we have more energy afterwards. Most people really tell me, if I go through them, through emotions with them, I feel like really energized right now and clear. There's a clarity and there's energy, because they're holding back the suppressing, the distracting, to holding all those emotions away. That's energy consuming. Without, it's exhausting. It takes so much energy and power from us. Mm-hmm. So there's a, you know, and then if you take the time, like slowing down and feeling the emotion, we have more energy afterwards to really do what we have to do, instead of trying to keep out that emotion. That, you know, there's a lot of energy going in those directions where we would need it for our daily task, maybe pick up the kids or go to work. Mm-hmm. So, and if people learn to really allow themselves to be with their emotions, then they can slow down. Mm-hmm. That's not for all, of course, but I mean for the people who have really difficult times to be with themselves, and not talking, because then they start to feel. And if they don't know how, what that's going to do to them, and they're not used to them, they will not go there to slow down. They will always stay busy and in their heads. So I think that would be, should also be mandatory in schools. That Eric, you know, if the parents don't teach their kids, so that the teachers would guide them through how to be with their emotions. And I think it's done in some schools nowadays, but it's still like this is a tiny percentage. Yeah, and then we can slow down what you said, and then we can also be with not talking. And if I embody my being, whatever will be wants to be expressed in that moment, I won't really need a lot of words, because people will sense it. I will sense your sadness or your anger or your peacefulness, and you don't even have to explain a lot. If I connect to you on that level of being, from being to being, a lot of things are just clear anyway, which would be nice.
Yeah, that's a good point you're bringing, because I sense that, I mean, we are communicating from so different levels, even though mainly we communicate with words and with mind and intellect, but we also communicate on a feeling level, we communicate on an energy level. And as you suggested, the more we slow down and the more we are connected really with the mind, with the feelings, with the energy level, the being, our conversation gets much more aligned and much more clear, because it can happen if we are not settled in that and not aligned inwardly, that our communication is so mixed up that it's really difficult to transmit clearly what it's about, because already inside of us there is a confusion and a chaos happening. So I find this very helpful, in because I think communication is a quite big topic as well. In we are so often have to do with other people, and communication is a way of exchanging and bringing really this authentic, clear communication everywhere is for me a big part of changing the quality, how consciously we are together.
Yes, just a deep, deep yes. And but this is what this, unfortunately, that doesn't happen in the boardrooms, in the meetings, in political discussions. Usually people are not connected to what's really there in that moment, and feelings are still considered to be, you know, they're not allowed in those meetings, which is silly, because they are anywhere there. So it's like this, the elephant in the room, but nobody talks about it. And but it has a big, huge influence on the outcome of any meeting, because it is part of the situation. It's part of what's going on there. So if we think, no, we only use the rational mind, it just doesn't work, because we're human beings, and there's everything is there anyway, and we sense it. And then what you said, it's like these mixed messages that come across. So one person is really polite and says something in a nice tone, but you feel the anger in a way, and you don't know what can I believe? And then you get like all, oh, can I trust? And then there's mistrust and all sorts of things. And it could be very easy if we could speak from that deeper place of also the more, you know, evolved level would be if we don't have to express it anymore, because we all would feel it, sense it anyway, and include it in the whole conversation. But if we're not there, at least the next step could be to really talk about it. to go like, oh, I sense a certain energy in that room. There's some, you know, aggression. Where does it come from? Can we all look at that? Can we all try to see what's going on? Because this is really disrupting our, you know, our conversation on that other level. So if we could do this as a first step in meetings, especially in the corporate world or in politics, if that could change a lot, you know, where people could be more fully there and not nowadays it's like most of the people I go to work and they feel like I can't be the person I am. Mm-hmm. They always, you know, report to me like, well, yeah, the, you know, in my work life and then in my other life. Mm-hmm. Very strange separation, mm-hmm. since it's one person and one life. Mm-hmm. So I think that would change a lot. And this is also something when we talk about feminine qualities in the corporate world, in politics, that we include the feelings,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that we become more whole, that we are more process oriented instead of result oriented,
mm-hmm.
you know, like it's not so much linear approach. It's more like that's why I love you, Jurt, like the round, the circularity, you know, mm-hmm. and it's, giving space, also creating spaces in the business world and for true conversations where everything is included.
You bring up really a very important word, this true, because I sense also that the more we really become true to ourselves, so really feeling and sensing and being open and connective and aware what is happening, it has a consequence then, because when I'm really true and when I'm listening to my whole system, mm-hmm. sometimes I can't stay in a certain environment anymore. Sometimes I need to change my job because mm-hmm. I sense that my whole system doesn't feel good in that. And if I'm not able to change it, maybe that means I need to change. I need to mm-hmm. find, or I need to, with the yurt, I needed to build a yurt. You know, it has a consequence. It mm-hmm. asks then, all right, when I sense that and when I'm true to myself, which actions are then appropriate and in alignment with mm. what feels really true for me? And I guess often this might be a block for us, because in a way we already sense when we go there, oh, changes would be necessary, but we kind of, we try to avoid because we then don't know. And so it takes also a lot of courage and honesty and actions which are then true for us. Yeah.
Mm.
Maybe
yeah.
you also want to share a bit about that, when you really you are in that alignment and you are true to yourself, that opens up sometimes challenges, consequences, actions, different mm. actions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I experience this a lot with especially people who come to see me for like in very high leadership positions, because they feel like they achieved everything, right? They have everything. They have a lot of money. They have power. They can make decisions. They're like at the top of their career. Yeah, there's nothing else they can really wish for. They even say that, right? But then there's this restlessness. This either they get sick in a way, or they feel really empty and they get depressed. All sorts of things why they come. And then when they really start to, and that's also like the deep listening. It's not the just deep listening with others. It's also the deep listening to go inside and what is my truth? What do I really feel there? And most of them, they know, but it's not that known. They know, they have a really clear sense of what would be the step, or what would be not the direct, the physical step, but what would be the thing, or the, what would they have to do? Like quit or just change the environment there, which I always hope, you know, that not everybody quits and goes and gets a, I don't know, goes in an ashram, but that they use their powerful, really powerful position and change their, you know, the work environment, how they interact there and how they treat each other and all that. And they know, they feel the truth, but they're really scared. They're so scared because they know they're at the end of that. They don't know the new one. So that's also like the not knowing. It's a transition to really to do that step to whatever it requires, maybe quitting the job or, I don't know, leaving the relationship, or it can be a lot of things. It could be even way minor, not so, you know, major decisions. But it's a transition what scares the people because they don't know what's going to be on the other side. But if we then go in our head and worry and, you know, think it through, we will never do that step. Never, ever. So it's even more important to go inside and to connect to that truth and to our heart and or to that inner deeper knowing. That's a different knowing. That's the wisdom. That's the essence. And if we follow, it still needs a little bit of courage, you know. It's still a bit, okay, I don't know, I'm just going to do that step. But if we pay more attention to this, that's going to be such a strong motor. We just have to do it. And those are the moments when we know, like that knowing, like here, not that knowing. When we just know, or people report later, I just had to do it. You know, it looked really not doable. Everybody said, no, don't do it. And I just knew I had to do it. And they're all happy that they did. Nobody in my field, I know, reported that it wasn't a good step. That doesn't mean it's all easy after that. But if we start to listen, A, we really feel the power. So if we face a challenge and we allow it to, you know, it brings us into our power. In our comfort zone, we will not experience our power. So if we have a challenge, and this is life anyway, you know, life is full of challenges, and life is not meant to be that we are always happy and comfortable. Nobody ever said that. It's just us, you know. Every plant, every animal is born and faces challenges right from the moment they are born or they come to this planet. So it's just us human beings. So if we would think everything should be easy and fine and convenient, so if we allow ourselves to face the challenge and stay inside and avoid to go in our head as much as possible, that we only go there to that our thinking about maybe making a plan, like planning the next steps, I have to write an email, I have to make a phone call, I have to book a flight to go there, whatever, that's great if we have that brain, right, in for those situations. But that our thinking is really informed by that knowing, by that deeper knowing, mm-hmm. like our wisdom. Mm-hmm. So that should be the practice, to go in, to listen to our truth, like deep listening, sensing what is true for us, and staying connected while we then And if we stay there and if we follow that truth, doors will open up.
Mm-hmm.
And we will meet the people we have to meet. And it might all look totally different than you ever expected it, because our brain cannot make that up. I don't know, laws behind it or a magic behind it. We cannot think of, we cannot, make it up in our mind.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it requires trust, but the deeper we connect to our essence, the less fear will be. There won't be so much fear in that being.
Mm-hmm.
So we can then follow that mm-hmm. truth, and it and I've seen so many changes in people's lives to the better, and just by following, by going inside, slowing down, allowing to feel what they feel, connecting to their truth, as you said, I love the truth, and becoming more and more that person that they already are. It's just like the access to it. So it's all there. It's not like something we have to develop or inquire, or it's there. It's just to, how do we access it? And that's by becoming still and slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In nature, that helps. So surround yourself by things that support that process of connecting. That may be people, it may be sitting in a church, that be in nature, listening or reading books that help you or inspire you. There's a lot of things you can do,
mm-hmm.
the doing, but then coming more in the being.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what just popped up when I listened to you, Gabi, that sometimes it can really take a really long time until a change is really surfacing. So I was quite challenged for really some years, because I was kind of used to know myself as a quite active person. But then I went through a period where I would kind of, all activities would kind of drop away and I couldn't be active anymore. And this period was for 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. And being with the not knowing and being with not doing. And I went through a phase, and I guess I share this because I guess many people can relate to it. My self-identity was so much connected to what I do, what I achieve, how I serve others, what impact do I make. So just not doing anything and just being was really a huge challenge. But now afterwards I can see that it provided that I really shifted to another level, to those qualities what you share so beautifully, that really listening, that feeling, that sensing. And what I also want to add, what I sense, and I'm curious how you experience that. I feel that when we are able to tune so deep in ourselves and through emotions, even deeper in being an energy, we seem to enter another reality where abilities are available for us, or a depth or a clarity of knowing which are not available to us when we are more mm-hmm. operating on our surface levels. But when we dare, and when we take the courage and go through steps and stages deep in ourselves, there opens a realm of magic in a way, of sacredness, of abilities which still amazes me, where you can really sense. I mean, I use it also for healing work, where I can really sense and see what is happening in the other person, which I never met, which I never saw. This person is maybe 1,000 kilometers away. And I just want to bring that to our awareness, because this is nothing special. We all have this ability. We all can dwell and be in them and let them just surface. And it's for me, it's really shifting so much reality that I feel I'm living in a different world when I go there. Although my eyes see maybe same forms and the furniture and people, but it looks so different that I would translate it like living in a different world.
And I think it is, because the other word is like the form identity, the world of the form identity, what we most of us live in. And there's a lot of illusions in all thought made, right? There's a lot of, I mean, most of it is thoughts, thinking, like constantly. And we believe it. We take that as the truth. And so if I, you know, the biggest question, like, who are you? You know, most people would answer with, well, I'm a manager, I'm a school teacher, I'm whatever, and, you know, explain and go in their history, in their story, in their past, what they achieved. And so this is what you said. If all that falls away, it's not accessible for a person due to whatever circumstances is what you experience. And I've experienced that too. And it's not pleasant at all. And it was really scary, and it was very, very difficult to be in that state of not being able to identify myself through the form. But then there's the essence identity, and there's this is all life. This is everything. And this is so much bigger. That's beyond everything we can even imagine. And we don't have words for it. And that makes it so difficult. But as soon as we put words to it, we conceptualize it again. And then we are back in the brain, in our head, and in our form identity. And I find that really, really hard, you know, but I don't think it's a bad thing to be, you know, we experience the form identity, all of us, and this is part of that word. And but if we can witness that, now I'm, you know, I'm operating out of the form identity, or this is what I need right now for my form identity, and that's okay, that's human. And then as often as we can connect to the other world, and that's really, as you described it so beautifully, it's just a different universe. It's a different, things fall into place, doors open up. And yes, this is what we call magic. And it's not us doing this. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big difference. And it's really, this is when we let go of our ego. In those moments, it can happen. So if I think many of the listeners experienced that too, and in their work, and you for sure, that if you just be in that space and you're a vessel for the energy coming through, you're just an instrument. You say things, you listen to yourself, and you go like, oh my God, that's brilliant. You know, I didn't know where that came from. I have to write that down. And it's so clear in that moment. It's not me. Although my ego wants to claim it, you know, my ego wants to go, well, I'm just a brilliant person. You know, I've never spoken about that, but But it's just not me. And and I know whenever I look back, when I've been in those situations, you know, teaching or coaching or whatever work I do with people, this is, I'm totally in that space of being. I don't think about what I have to do. But yes, I did prepare my vessel. So that means that's the masculine part, coming back to the feminine masculine. It's like preparing my, sharpening my knife, basically, you know, for if I use that tool, or knowing also what, you know, techniques, what I can apply then when I sense a certain situation. And now I know, okay, now I maybe apply certain tools to help the process in a team coaching or whatever I do. So it's preparing the vessel. That's like something, you know, doing, practicing, exercising, and then getting in that state, and then it comes through, and then not claiming, not letting the ego claim it for it's me. I'm doing this. And the more we go there, it's way more fulfilling anyway. And it takes a lot of pressure, because I don't have to do that again. You know, I, you know, it's not like my personal responsibility, or it's bigger than me. And that feels very powerful, and that's, there's a deep wisdom and truth coming through through us. And but that only happens by slowing down, connecting, and we're back to, you know, to all what we already talked about it. That's why I think that's so important, especially in these times nowadays, where and we, you said at the beginning, female leadership, you know, when it comes to leadership, if we lead by being instead of doing, it has way more impact. If all the leaders out there who are in that position for whatever reason in the moment, if they go inside and connect to the truth and to that what is beyond their little ego, that's very, very powerful. And if they follow that truth, people will automatically follow. So following your truth makes you almost to a leader, if you know, if it requires that people come with you. You don't have to be like, I'm the leader, I'm gonna lead. It's just you follow your truth, you follow your essence, that what's connected, and coming from that part, connecting to your people also, connecting to your feelings, you will make different decisions as a CEO or whatever manager you are. I'm talking about the corporate world right now, because I see a lot of potential there, and working with corporate in a corporate environment or in organizations and teams, I see how much impact that can have if the leaders live it, like be an example of that. Go ahead.
So what I just get when I listen to you, Gabi, is that it's really being a leader from inside out. Just, it starts with being a leader just for yourself on your own, and then just people naturally would kind of be attracted, because when I sense someone really authentically in their leadership, it's attractive. I'm curious. I want to listen to them. It doesn't mean that I give up my own decisions or my opinions, but it feels attractive. It makes me curious. And I guess this is then a true inner authentic leadership quality, which is not coming from climbing up a hierarchical ladder in a company. It's a true leadership, and I also want to just bring it to our awareness that this kind of being in this leadership just on our own. We can live it everywhere. We can live it in our relationship, in our families, in of course it has a huge impact when we live it in a big company. And what pops up for me is then in a true leadership, I would not be interested in that people just do what I want. I'm then also really interested that every other person which is involved is in their leadership as well. Mm-hmm. And that for me, that is such a huge shift in how we are together in companies. That's where everyone would be supported in really thriving into their authenticity and their potential and their leadership. And I'm so much longing to see in companies.
Yeah, and I think that would be very natural then. Yes. Because if we are connected to our essence, the essence is for the higher good of everything and every being. Because there is the interconnectedness, and we sense it and we feel it. So we can't really make decisions against that. If we stay in that space, that's just not possible. Because if we wanna thrive, everybody has to thrive. It's just not working. Mm-hmm. If it is working in a way, when we look at our world right now, that there are, you know, some people are thriving on like financially materialistic field, they're thriving a lot, and a lot of people are really suffering. So in that sense, yes, it is possible, but I mean, like, thriving and being, feeling the life force, the joy, like deep joy, deep love, different from conditioned love, what we talk about mostly in our relationships. And if we, that's so much more fulfilling. And it's, and just by talking about it, I get so emotional, because I think it's really a deep, 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 deep wish and hope that we as human species make that shift. And it's, right now it's very bumpy. It's there's a lot of friction, because like the polarities pull so much. And I think we are at a point in our evolution where we manage that we could extinguish, is this the right word? Yeah. The whole planet, mm-hmm. with just pressing one button, for example. And I think this is really, we are at a point, it's almost an end to that phase of reality, of evolution right now. And I think this is why it's so getting so, so tight, so urgent. Thank you. Yeah, so urgent right now, because we are at the point of transition. Mm-hmm. So the point of transitioning to a different level of evolution. Mm-hmm. And the transition, as I said before, like on an individual level, that's scary, because we don't know. It's the same thing. It's about not knowing. And I think the more comfortable we get with not knowing, more being in that not knowing, the easier it gets to make that shift. Mm-hmm. And it might be that there's first a regression that we go back to, you know, it's going like step forward, and then we might fall back in like a dark age mm-hmm. and then come back out. But whatever consciousness is there right now, it's not going to be lost. It's just going to be, still going to be there. Mm-hmm. And it's a seed, and it's going to sprout when changes all. That was what I really loved when Eckhart Tolle said, change is only happening when it's ready, when it's time for the change. Mm-hmm. So you can't force change. So we can be with what is, and we can participate in the change, in being more that awareness and conscious, awaken more and more on our individual level and thus collectively, and then change will happen. But we can't force it. And it always needs, I think, the suffering, what we experience right now on the earth, that's what we need for the change.
Yeah.
Change never happened in the comfort zone. Never.
This is what I get, is there is this necessity for a shift in consciousness. It was luxury, but now it's a necessity. I guess we, in a way, there is no choice. We need to become more conscious.
Yeah. And it's beautiful to see how many people really from, they've never been on any spiritual path. You know, like the people I talked before, like top leaders in economy or something. And when they come and for coachings, or they feel that urge, they can't name it, you know, they can't they can't put words to it. They don't have, it's actually nice, they don't have a concept about it. So yeah. they just feel like, you know, they just feel like, oh my God, I'm feeling
the tension, and
I'm feeling the tension. Exactly. Thank you. That's actually the perfect, precise word. There's tension. There's a lot of tension, and then they feel it in their body, and then they feel it in their relationship at home, and then they feel it everywhere. And they go like, oh my God, is this it? You know, they feel like this, is this it? And yes, they feel it more on an individual level first, but this is anyway the way where we have to go, you know, going on an individual level inside. And if we all do our inner work, every single person, the collective will do it. Not one single person will change the life or the world situation right now, but we are together. So I really, really, I'm very thankful for all those people who come and go like, I don't know what's going on, but my life seems to be a mess. I can't handle it. I don't get a grip on it anymore. I can't manage. I can't handle. It's all very masculine. It's like, okay. And then they start to go into the feeling through those coachings. And this is opening up a different realm, what you said, and being connected. And very beautiful. I always hope they stay in their position, what I said before, and change the system from, change the work culture, the work system from inside out, in, you know, staying there. I have a lot of hope, you know.
Me too.
But I don't know, you know, if you're gonna shift it now. But then at another time, maybe when we are not in this physical body anymore, it's gonna shift. But if we still can do our work and we can still participate in it, even if we might not live it then.
Thank you, Gabi, for bringing the consciousness, really focusing on the female quality. I really appreciate it, having this in the summit. And I my feeling is we covered quite a lot on this topic, and at least for me, it was really also, I could sense it. It wasn't just shared only with words. And I hope that our audience also has a similar experience.
Me too. I hope it touched some people. And if it's just confirming them on their way, that they're not alone on their way, that there are many out there, and that's beautiful to know. And so thanks to you for that summit, because that really shows that there are a lot of people out there who really care about, you know, this planet and then conscious evolution. Yeah, and maybe all together we can do it. So we can be it, not do it. You better be it.
Thank you so much, Gabi. All the best to you, to your spreading your inspiration, your bringing your being into the world, into the corporate world, into FemQ. And thank you so much for bringing this presence and wisdom and beingness into the summit. Thank you, Gabi.
Thank you.